Hello, folks. This is Paul, and we're going to begin a little early today because we've got a very loquacious friend, and we're going to be discussing an interesting religion that everybody should know a little bit about, the Baha'i faith. So today we are going to be talking to a good friend of mine. We met here in Chapel Hill some, 8 years ago now. And I just like getting together with him and talking religion. And the great thing about Ray, hey, Ray, you want to say hello?
Hey there. How's everybody?
Good. Well, the great thing about Ray is he likes to talk about religion, too. Of course, we don't see eye to eye, but that's what makes the conversation so much, so interesting.
Always. And because, we see more eye to eye than we think.
Yeah, that's true. He keeps trying to convince me that I'm a Baha'i, but just don't know it yet.
That's
way, right. Yes. But in all due time, we'll all be Baha'is in the by and bys.
Yes, indeed.
In the by and by, we'll all be Baha'is.
There you go.
Okay, so Ray, we are starting a little early, so let's do sort of a personal introduction, and then at around 11, we'll identify this show as Touchstones. And we're WCOM, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. It's your community radio station where the air is free, and we hope to keep it that way. You're an all-volunteer radio station, so nobody here gets paid, but we still need some of your money, friends, to keep the roof from leaking any worse than it already is. So Ray, why don't you give us about how did you become a Baha'i? Were you born a Baha'i?
No, as a matter of fact, I was born on quite the other side of the spectrum. I came from a family that was, if you were to say right wing, you would be calling it liberal. My father was extraordinarily far to the right. And I lived in a home that was nominally Christian, but not too serious about
this. This was in sunny California?
No, actually, more in Portland, Oregon, eventually in Nebraska, and then eventually to California when I was a teenager.
So you really were a road rat. You ran around a lot.
Well, my family got driven off the farm during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
They lost all their possessions and everything to a bank,
mm-hmm.
as we are today feeling some of those kinds of effects. And that actually affected my family because it took us from a very shall we say, Germanic family. My father spoke mm-hmm. German in the home. He spoke
right.
German at church. He spoke German at school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very much indoctrinated during the 30s in thinking of Germany at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, though, I grew up in that atmosphere, but my grandmother gave me a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read the Bible and heard what my father had to say, let's just say there was a monumental disagreement. And it kind of
about
made
the,
it
about the Bible, huh?
Well, about life, because
about life.
At 12 years old, I said to my father, "You know, Dad, you're going to get us all cursed." And he looked at me like, "Well, what you talking about?" And I said, "Well, Dad," because he was very anti-Semitic, and I said, "Dad, the Bible says he who curses Israel, God will curse, and he who blesses Israel, God will bless." And so I said, "Dad, I'm blessing Israel. I'm not going to give," and that kind of set the stage to where eventually I said to him one day, because I was hearing all this anti rhetoric, everything mm-hmm. against black people, against Jews, against Democrats, all kinds of things. So I said to him, "Well, Dad, you know, I'm really quite ashamed of being a German after all I've heard." Because I connected it to being German.
Well, also World War II. I guess it was. I guess your father was sort of pro-Nazi in a way.
He very much had some sympathies in that direction.
Sympathies in that direction, yes.
Along with, of course, most people don't realize it, but Henry Ford was very much a supporter of that way of thinking.
There were a lot of Germans here who really wished America would have identified more with the German cause than the British.
Yes, and unfortunately that's where I was raised. But because I read the Bible, I started seeing a different picture. And so we had conflict. The one thing about it, my father let me be me. He called me his pinko son. which mm-hmm. is, you know, a lighter shade of being from being a communist. Mm-hmm. Pinko was more of a socialist. At least he didn't put me too far out there.
Yeah.
But he allowed me to think for myself, and in many ways we had a wonderful relationship. Personally, I loved him dearly,
mm-hmm.
but we never agreed much on anything. And but it set the stage, because I started searching for truth until I got to high school, and then I discovered girls, and that kind of distracted
that
me for
That
a while.
Is a little distraction. Those girls, they definitely assuaged the truth for a while.
Oh, they kept me off track for a while, yes. But it came about 19 years old. I realized I can't keep living the way I've been living and going direction. I'm really going to lose myself, so...
Mm-hmm.
I tell the story.
Yeah.
I was working in a department store selling shoes, and mm-hmm. I decided to go upstairs, and I went in the men's room and knelt between the toilet bowl and the wall, and I made a deal with God. I said, "Lord, if you're there, and if you haven't forgotten me, I will do it your way, but I need some power. I need some willpower to overcome
my desires.
My desires.
Yes.
And they were very powerful. And,
as were the women fetching.
And I knelt down and put my face on the ground, and it was not exactly a clean surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "See, Lord, I'm going to show you. I really mean this. Help me, and I'll serve you." And basically, a couple of weeks later, I found myself in a church, and I gave my life to Christ in that church.
It wasn't the prodigal son was in the gospel
That was the prodigal son was the sermon that day.
That was the sermon that day.
That was the sermon that day. And I stood up in the middle of that church, and I had gone there to prove to everybody that everybody there was a hypocrite. That was mm-hmm. my plan. A lady challenged me to come to her church, so
right.
I took a comic book and sat in the back row by the door reading a comic book, which I knew would irritate everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But an old man came in, and he went to the front of the church, and he asked everybody to rise up and kneel down, and
mm-hmm.
and then he started to pray, and I refused to kneel. I'm sitting up in the church. Only
that's
person
right.
sitting up.
That's right. No kneeling before God.
That's right.
And nobody. You don't want anybody to know what you were doing in that bathroom.
Exactly. So I looked in his face as he was praying. He was praying in Italian, and he was mm-hmm. saying, "Oh, Signore," and he would go on, and then, "Oh, Signore." So I figured out, "Oh, Signore," must mean God.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked in his face, because he was facing me, tears were streaming down his face, and mm-hmm. it just struck my heart. This is no hypocrite. This is a real believer. And later on, I got to know the man. I said, "So what were you praying for so hard?" Oh, he said, "Ray, I was praying for you." It worked.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah,
so that's sort of my spiritual journey to a mm-hmm. greater degree.
So, you deal with the religions that are in our communities, and you're a... I guess this is some form of evangelical Protestant.
It was, very definitely.
Church. And
they took me out to Mission Bay in San Diego, California, and mm-hmm. baptized me in Mission Bay with all the bathing beauties out there watching. And,
well, that must have been.
It was kind of significant.
And you in your only white shirt and underwear. Yes,
There you go.
So the... So how did you go from... And in some ways, I think something that I know about Ray is that you're integral. You've never actually ever abandoned any of the religion that you've understood.
No.
You're like a snowball. You just keep collecting more and more of it, wrapping it around.
Yes.
So we have a core, a religious core, that's traditional, sort of literal. And now, eventually, you come to various crises of conscience or
yes,
understanding
definitely.
That leads to the Baha'i faith. So, well, how would you characterize that?
There were a couple of key passages, because I started really studying the Bible. I was just 19 when this conversion took place, and I started studying. But I studied kind of on my own. I didn't have anybody tell me what I was reading and how I should read it. And when I read the story of Moses on the mountain, and he asked God, "Lord, what is your name?" When the children of Israel asked me, "What is your name? What shall I say?" And he says, "I am that I am." And I pondered, what is that saying?
Yeah.
And then he says, and this is, and then later on in that verse, he says, "And this is my name forever."
Right.
Now, this stuck with me. I knew that the bush wasn't God. God's not a bush.
Yeah, so God despite was, what some people thought recently.
Yes. He speaks through that bush, all right? Mm-hmm. So when later on I see Jesus saying, I am the bread of heaven,
mm-hmm.
and I am the living word, and yeah. all these things, yeah. I'm saying, is he using a double entree here? Is he saying, I am, so on one level, but actually he's saying, the voice and power and spirit and power of God is speaking through Jesus.
Right.
And then what really cinched mm-hmm. it and was where he says, before Abraham was, I am. And that did it. I said, ah, the I am that spoke to Moses is now speaking through Jesus of Nazareth.
Right.
Now that set me up for the next thing is where
okay,
he said,
and before you go on to okay. that, I want to do a station identification here. You're listening to Touchstones. I'm your host, Paul Nash, and this is WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. It's your 100-watt wonder, your community radio station. We're at 103.5 FM, and if you can't get us on the radio dial, you have to be pretty close to the station to get us on the radio dial. You can get us on the internet at communityradio.coop. And hit the web streaming. Web streaming is brought to us by, I don't know how that happened. Web streaming is brought to us by by iBiblio, and we thank them for providing the bandwidth for this station. On that note, we are talking to Ray Estes, who is a Baha'i, a longtime friend of mine, sort of a religious crony, and he and I are going to continue the conversation with how he discovered the Baha'i faith, and then also in what are the central tenets of the Baha'i faith. And we're probably going to continue this conversation next week, too, on part two, in which we will discover some more of the intricacies of the intricate relationship of Baha'i prophecy as it relates to Christian, Jewish, and Muslim prophecy. But right now, let's get back to Ray's story. Ray, you want to continue?
Okay, well, I came to that passage that in general we all hear about, I am the way, the truth, and the life. But now I was mm-hmm. reading it a different way. Yahweh, the truth, and the life.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the spirit and power of God is the way, the truth, and the life, but it reaches us through a variety of instruments.
Yeah, you go your way and I go Yahweh. Yeah.
And this really was challenging. And particularly what really cinched it for me to open myself up to the idea that we Christians were not the only ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because my whole idea of Christ's message is the integration of the Samaritans
universal.
And Jews and Romans. And, you know, if you think about it, Jesus came into the world when there were the Romans who thought they were the superior people because they had conquered everybody.
Right.
And the Greeks knew they were the superior people because they were smarter than everybody
right,
else.
Right.
And the Jews knew that they were the chosen people because God called them for that.
Yeah, because they were the bankers.
and so this was, each one had this attitude and they weren't very friendly towards each other. And yet, when the Christian church was formed, Christ actually brought those three groups together to sit in, together in the same community,
mm-hmm.
and they became the foundation of the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I knew this, and I thought, oh, my goodness, if only we could be more like that. But anyway, to make the next stage that happen, I read where Jesus says, other sheep I have, which are not of this fold,
mm-hmm.
them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice. Now, I know the usual idea is that the Gentiles were that, but they weren't a fold. They were not a community, so to speak.
There are a lot of tribes, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But there were other religious communities around the planet.
Right.
And it came to me that that voice of the Holy Spirit
mm-hmm.
has been everywhere on this planet.
Right.
No tribe has been left out of hearing somewhere along the line in their history the voice.
Right.
And it just thrilled me. But when I went to share this idea with my fellow the members of the church.
The idea of the universal Christ, it tends to extend that one and button it down to the sectarian Christ.
Exactly. The idea we're the only ones, when in fact what it really comes down to is like in the 24th Psalm where it says the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and everyone who lives therein. And then goes on to say, who shall ascend to the mountain of God? He who has a pure heart, clean hands, and has not lifted himself up to vanity. I heard all this and I thought, this is the Spirit of Christ in its fullness.
Right.
And now I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's just say I was not received well by the learned people of the community I belong to. And to make a long story short, they eventually called me a heretic. And actually had a trial where they brought charges against me of being a heretic because I was influencing a lot of the younger people in my church. So
Right. They
excommunicated me and asked me never, ever to come back and darken their door again for teaching such radical ways of thinking.
Well, you think what they would have rather done is said, we really like your ideas, but they need to be moderated with a full understanding of what the Bible means. So get thee to seminary, but they didn't try to do that to you.
No, they wanted me out and out fast because it was starting to influence too many people. But that started me on a journey to look for a community that would accept my unusual perspective.
Yes, and even the Baha'is have thought of excommunicating you on occasion.
No, not really. But not really. Let's just say that anybody
once in a while,
every once in a while, you do say things or things that can make people wonder where you're coming from. But
In
fact, one of the beautiful things about the Baha'i faith, independent investigation of truth. So there's a lot of freedom to see things through your own eyes.
And also, don't have a professional clergy, is that right?
No professional clergy.
It's, right.
We have councils that run our affairs.
Right.
We call them spiritual assemblies. It's a democracy of that kind.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have very strong sense of direction and covenant. And we are a cohesive body, but with more freedom of thought and consciousness than we've ever seen, I think, in a community of this type.
Yeah, it does very like. So you're out in the wilderness. You've been cast out,
and I wandered
out of the palace
into the
wilderness. So did you find women alluring again, or did you?
No, not that they haven't always been alluring,
yeah.
But at the same time, I had a strong covenant that when you get married, this is a lifelong proposition.
So by this time, you were married. Huh?
Oh yes, I had. I prayed to God to help me find a
and
wife.
And I think it's the woman you're still with, as a matter of fact.
Yes, 47 years of married life.
Okay. So
and she went with me on this journey, and
I'm just expressing a little envy here, Ray, that you've managed to be so lucky in life.
Well, I consider it, I went looking in the right way, and it turned out to be a very positive
Good for you. So what happened next?
Well, I wandered around for a couple of years finding this group and that group, but as soon as they found out how I thought, I just found myself unwelcome. One day, I was talking to a young woman who was dressed up in Indian outfit. She had buckskins on, moccasins on, a feather in her hair, but she was red-haired and with freckles. Mm-hmm. And I knew she was no Indian, so I asked her, what are you doing walking around like this?
Mm-hmm.
So she told me her story. She was standing up for Indian rights at the time, and it was 1966.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of my first introduction to a hippie. And so she basically told me her story. And then she said, well, tell me your story. So I told her my story, and then she said, well, you know, your problem is
you got to take some LSD.
No, she said, you're not what you think you are. You're actually a Baha'i. And I said, a what? She said, a Baha'i. I said, what in heaven's name is a Baha'i? And how could I possibly be one? I've never even heard of it before. And she says, they believe like you do that God has been basically guiding the whole human race.
Mm-hmm.
And make a long story short, she said, well, you know, I know some Baha'is. I said, well, are you a Baha'i? No, she says, I'm a Presbyterian, but I know a Baha'i when I meet one. So she said, I have some friends that are Baha'is, and I'll invite them over to my house, and you can come. I says, I don't want to go. She said, what do you mean? I says, oh, I don't want to be in connection to some weird organ, you know, oriental mm-hmm. organization. I'm not into that. And she says, oh, then you're a hypocrite. I said, what do you mean I'm a hypocrite? She says, I just told you there's a whole bunch of people think like you.
Mm-hmm.
They have a strange name, yes, but, you know, you should be interested.
You should find out about them. Yeah. You should at least find out about them before you just close the book on them.
Huh? That's right. So okay. she shamed me into going.
To checking it out, huh?
And so I went to the meeting, and there were three people there, an older woman and two young men. And then she had also invited all her classmates. She was in college, and they came to watch the fracas. They wanted to see what would happen.
Oh, was it you fighting them with your fire and brimstone Bible reasons?
She knew this mm-hmm. would be a hot discussion, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, after I got through giving my portion of what I see is to be real, expecting the Baha'is to basically turn away and say, well, we're done with this.
Yeah.
They seemed to respond in a positive way to what I was saying. And so then I said, okay, tell me what this is about. And I'll put it in the language of how it felt to me.
Okay.
When they told me they believe in God, they believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They believe in the God that is the unknowable essence that Buddha talked about. Express that God is seen in many different ways, but what matters is do you receive it in your heart?
Mm-hmm.
And the God
does
of justice.
Does it transform you and make you a better person?
Exactly. It's the God of justice, the God mm-hmm. of mercy, the God of love.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless what you call it, the Creator, that power that brought all this into existence and loves us.
Which is what you kind of come to your own self and pondering the great I am. Yeah.
That's right. I realize the I am meaning I exist, but don't try to define it too closely because it's out of human range to really get that defined.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I've never heard it expressed that way before. And then they said something that really was interesting. They said, and we believe he sends to us in stages of our development, our evolutionary process, God sends the messengers that lead us and guide us, much like in a school system that we move from stage to stage, so that Moses and Abraham came before Jesus and then Jesus came. Mm-hmm. But of course, then he dropped the bombshell on me that Muhammad was also one of these in this line. And that, of course, was very challenging to me. But I love the basic idea that voice they were saying has been all over the planet, and that all the foundation religions of the world actually are a result of this voice, but that mankind has a tendency to mess it up. By the time often we get through with a religion, we pretty well twisted it and turned it to our own advantage.
We tribalize it.
Yeah.
You know, we make it into a possession.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then keep others out with our interpretation.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
when I heard that, I just loved the idea that at last I could look at a person who is a Buddhist and look at them with a positive life as a fellow brother or sister in God's, and they use the term God's cause.
Mm-hmm.
That God's cause is the unification, the spiritualization, the beautification, the upraising of human beings to be more godlike. And that this is the cause that God has for us, is to enjoy being as he would wish us to be. And I love that idea.
So in some ways, the way you're telling it, the way I'm hearing it at least, is that you were a universalist. You in the sense that you saw that God as a reality was bigger than our books and our words about God, or even our understanding about God, and that we should embrace a religion that could be as universal and even stretch us more to be a greater universalness. Oh, I see where that strange sound is coming from.
I turned it off.
Oh, I thought it was a bleed through from somewhere else in the things. Okay. So it wasn't. I wondered where that sound was coming from. Okay, so
I'm famous for this. I've been giving talks sometimes, and my phone goes up.
Oh, okay. But so the your appetite's been wet.
Weren't you
just a little more resistant? I don't know about
well,
you.
Well, I'm going to the
when
next
somebody,
step. There's
you know,
a little more to this, because
okay.
Then they told me that the real issue is the issue of our time, which is that the planet has come together through communications and travel and modern invention, that this was caused by God, that in the Bible it says, and I will pour out knowledge upon the earth, it'll cover the earth like water covers the sea. Well, I knew we were in such a time. And then they said that fundamentally, this is the day to recognize the oneness of mankind, that there's really only one race, the human race. As I put it, some people have more suntan than others. And we get too carried away by appearances, when in reality we all have the human heart, and we all have a connection to our Lord, and that all of us need to recognize that. And that the days of nationalism being the primary thing, you know, I'm loyal to a part of humanity, has to be secondary to our loyalty, as the teachings of the Baha'i Faith are, the loyalty to our love for humanity and for life.
Right.
And that that's the universal truth of our day, that we can't solve the problems of today without working together in a more harmonious sense. And they call this the unity of mankind.
Yes, yeah, and
the goal.
And that is, and that was, that's one of the evangelical goals of Baha'i.
Yes.
But there are others too, so why don't you just say what some of those are.
And one of them is the end of male domination of the earth. That
what a shame.
Our day of running the show has come to an end, that we are now co-equal with our partners in all this process, the woman. And so the woman and the man have come together to be really one in a whole new sense of things.
Now, I know from previous conversations with you that Baha'is have an interesting take on education for women.
Yes.
Yeah, why don't you mention that?
Yes, if we go into an area where there's limited education and a person has a male child and a female child, that you make sure the female child is educated first. The reasoning, the female is the teacher of the child from its earliest days, and if there's any time the child needs to be exposed to the broader picture of things and a greater understanding of things, it's in through the mother's teaching. So we are very strong about educating women, because in some ways they have been and still are in many ways the civilizing force in human affairs, and we need to strengthen that and recognize its great value. And then there's another one that really made a difference to me. I've always felt that you know, like Paul said, when I was a child, I spake as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. I knew that the superstitious way that we interpret the scriptures of all religions, from a 2,000 or 3,000-year-old way of looking at things, that in today's world we have to integrate a scientific approach, that science is a part of God's gift to us, and that in this day and age, reason and faith must come together. So science and religion should harmonize.
Right.
And it can when we look at it correctly and no longer have to throw out our brains in order to have faith in God. And that was a major piece to me, because I really felt strongly that science is a wonderful gift, but it needs to be moderated by morals and spiritual perspectives.
Right.
Otherwise, it becomes materialism.
Yeah.
On the other hand, religion, when it's not balanced by reason and science, becomes fanaticism, or it can become irrational in many ways, and becomes superstitious. And so we got to find that's why the Baha'i Faith, they were saying to me that God has sent the spirit, once again, of the I Am into the world to guide us into this new modern age where we can beat our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks, where the lion and the lamb can lie down together. Of course, them guys are always the lion and we're always the lamb, you know. But, of course, if you look at it from their viewpoint, they're the lamb and we're the lion. But needless to say, where we finally stop the nonsense. And it's kind of summated this way. Baha'is honor the truth that we've gained from the religions of the past. They have a beauty that's eternal in them. But we've managed to change things around a bit. But in this day, we honor the past.
Right.
But we cannot continue to repeat it. we have a new day, the seventh day, the millennium that we're now dealing with. And the object is to establish truly the kingdom of God on earth. Mm-hmm. And that's the calling of the Baha'i faith, is put down our prejudices, our angers, forgive each other, and let's move forward into the future with the brightness that's possible. And with some certain recent events that have happened, I think we are seeing that possibility more than maybe ever before.
Yes, with our new, there is a great many hopes are pinned on the brilliance and equanimity of our new president-elect. And I know some of us probably might be a little restrained in our hope, only that we, but in the same way, have a greater feeling of hopefulness than we've been able to see otherwise.
Yeah, we don't believe there's any one individual or government or country that can solve our problems, but we do believe that God inspires change.
Mm-hmm.
God inspires when we need it, if we've got the right attitude.
We can find ways to cooperate. You
yes.
know. And you know, even if we need to be competitive, that we learn to compete in ways that don't necessarily mean that a warfare and annihilation,
yes,
or utter degradation of the planet.
Well, in many ways, we believe you don't convert people to the Baha'i faith. You recognize it. It's kind of like these things are in our hearts. These truths are not something that just come from reading a book. And then it's the book almost confirms what the heart is already realizing.
Yes.
So that the hunger for world peace and the hunger for understanding and the hunger for putting aside our ancient hatreds and prejudices is something that we believe God is inspiring the planet to start feeling and seeing more and more.
So how does your wife take to being introduced into the Baha'i faith after you discovered it from this thing?
There's an interesting story how I introduced the Baha'i faith to my wife. I came back from that meeting with the Baha'is, and I was pretty shook, but at the same time I was cautious. You know, I thought, oh, there might be a hook in here somewhere. Maybe they're after my money, or they're saying all these good things, but they don't mean
so
it. So I told them to give me a book. I'm going to read up, and the next time I come to see you, I'm going to be better informed, and kind of like, we'll see where it takes us next time. But I took the book, and I went home, and my wife was baking cookies. My wife will love to hear me tell this story. And so I said to her, Joanne, I've had an interesting evening. Would you mind putting down the cookie dough and, you know, sit down? Let me share with you this interesting evening. And she says, well, I'm baking cookies right now. When I'm finished baking the cookies, then we can do that. And I, come on, Joanne. She says, Ray, cookies now, religion later. And anyone who's been married for any length of time knows that that tone of voice means this is the end of the discussion. Mm-hmm. And then she said to me, Grandma's recipe is sitting over on the counter, mm-hmm. and Grandma's recipe had been cut out of a newspaper. It was very old and yellowed, but it had mm-hmm. two sides. And I went over disgustedly to pick up the, because she said something like, what do I do after I put in the chocolate chips, you know? And
mm-hmm.
so I went over and I picked it, but I picked up Grandma's recipe backwards. And on the back of the recipe was a picture of the Baha'i Temple in Chicago. And all the principles that I just enumerated were listed underneath the picture. Needless to say, I'd never heard of Baha'i faith before.
That's strange.
And I come home, and picking up the cookie recipe here, I, let's just say my knees gave a little bit of quiver. And I thought, no, I better be careful.
A little serendipity.
What I'm getting into here. You know, this might be really something to take serious. So anyway, that's how I introduced it to my wife. And to my wife's credit, she somehow heard what it was about and really looked into it for herself. And several months later, she became a Baha'i. But on the other hand, I took this book and I read 92 to 93 pages of it. And I came to a part that really hit me. At first of all, I was reading things that were very stirring in my heart about mm-hmm. unity, about cooperation, about God loving the whole earth, etc. But I came to a part where it says, by the power of God's might, resolve to gain the victory over your own self, that happily the whole earth can be made free. And I looked at that and I said, you know, So often we want the victory, but it's over somebody else. When I know the truth, it's all about the conquering of my own self-centeredness, my own selfishness. It's the key.
Right.
I said, now, you know, false prophets don't teach that. They teach those guys out there are the bad guys, but we're the good guys always, you know. And I heard this, and I thought, that comes from the truth.
That comes from a deeper place of where the truth is, huh?
And then I read the next paragraph, and this really did it. It says, oh, people of God, do not busy yourselves in your own concerns. Let your thoughts be fixed upon that which will rehabilitate the fortunes of mankind and sanctify the hearts and the souls of men. And I just, I was moved to the core. I says, I'm so tired of thinking all the time about how I'm going to go to heaven. It's all about me. It is true that I have to find the power of God to conquer my own self-centeredness. But in the end, I've got to turn it outward and become focused on what can be done. How can God use my life to make a difference for humanity? And I'll just say that at that point, I knew I was a Baha'i.
It's an interesting, it's a very interesting point. I want to add a little editorial aside here. Well, actually, yesterday I was reviewing some books, and one of the books I chose from the Buddhist pantheon is from a library called the Library of Tibetan Classics, and it's going to be a 50 volume series. This was the first volume that they decided to put, and these are the unique aspects of Tibetan Buddhist teachings that are, you know, that have been developed in a certain way in Tibet. And the first one, the book was called Mind Training. It was this big, 700-page tome, which is, I always like fat books, so I was real happy with this. But it actually is a very, very simple teaching. But it's, but with a lot of elaboration on its ethical implications and other ways of understanding it. It's called Mind Training, but what it actually is the taking the self-centered thought, me first, right, and putting the other first so that the other becomes and the way this is done is through a very simple breathing rhythmic exercise, very similar to the Jesus Prayer, which you probably know of. Which is where you think of the pain and the suffering and the concern and the cares of all the people in the world, the people you know, you love, even the people you are angry, have all issues with. And you take in and you breathe in. When you breathe in air, you breathe in their suffering and their pain and their things. And then when you exhale, that they are feeling good and that there is joy and there is equanimity with them. So you breathe in their pain and you exhale good joy to them so that they become the pivot upon which our self is. You see, we don't have a self without the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the other actually is, as it were, the mold of our self. And we think our self comes first, but actually our self comes second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a secondary concern that we misplace, as long as we think ourself is first, we suffer.
Yes.
But when we know that the other is first, then we no longer suffer. And we have the capacity to have the other as first. And this is, this is the amazing power of what saints do, what... And of what the very statements that moved you just said. So I just thought I'd bring that up. This development of self, which you learn how to decenterize egotistically through meditation and prayer, through various religious exercises. Mm-hmm. All well-developed religions emphasize ultimately that the other comes first.
Yes.
But it does take a while to sometimes discover those teachings because we have a tendency, as it were, to misrepresent them to ourselves, to rethink that Well, Buddha was only concerned with your own salvation because everybody else is damned. Mm-hmm. The situation, it doesn't really work that way.
Well, and the idea too is that when we set out on this spiritual journey, we all do maybe at first are very concerned with ourselves, but if we continue on long enough, we will notice that the love of God. Mm-hmm. Encourages us to the love of the whole. And as a result, we learn soon that the joy of life mm-hmm. is our purpose to serve and to find God's purpose for us to make a difference in this world and to find out that we do have, each of us has a part to play in God's plan.
Sure.
And that God is calling us in our hearts to find that part to play. But part of it is that we have to develop, at the same time, control. And this is where Christ really helped us understand that when we turn to God with all our heart, we can gain the power from the Holy Spirit to control ourselves, and it will guide us. And in this case, the Baha'i Faith says, it will guide us now to our part to play because the world is changing. And we can have a part in making it more beautiful than it ever has been before.
Yeah. So let's do you want to round up your own introduction to Baha'i? Because then I want you to do a little characterization of Baha'i from, you know, who Baha'u'llah was and who the Bab was.
Okay.
and how it got started.
A little
exterior thing, but want to wrap up your own introduction.
Well, actually, what happened is I basically fell on my knees mm-hmm. and asked God to forgive me for taking 5 whole days to recognize the truth. Now, they had introduced me to the idea.
And this time he wasn't doing this in the restroom.
No. This time it was in my own bedroom.
Yeah.
But I recognized, you see, I was very familiar with basic fundamentalist teaching about mm-hmm. about the rapture.
Right.
And it dawned on me at this moment that I was being raptured. Now, mm-hmm. this might sound strange to people, but see, I was not a literalist.
Mm-hmm.
I saw things in a mystical way. I realized that
He was feeling good, folks. He was feeling really good.
Yeah, but I knew it's like God is sending the truth down from heaven, so to speak, like Christ said he came mm-hmm. from heaven, and the Jews yeah. said at the time, what do you mean coming from heaven? We know your mother and father. You come from Nazareth. But in fact, he was saying that the spirit and power of God had come from heaven, was speaking through him. I recognized that I was seeing, I was hearing the truth of God is descending. And I was a seeker, and I was rising up, trying to find that truth, and in a sense met in midair when I discovered this new way of seeing and truth as it was being revealed. And it was changing me. In a twinkling of an eye, I suddenly saw everything with a new eye, a beautiful new mm-hmm. Universal eye.
Right.
And I could never be the same again.
It's amazing.
So
the other thing is that I actually know that you actually brought a number of people along with you in a way, like Marty, for instance. I don't know if you knew Marty at this time or not, but
yes, I did. As a matter of fact, this is kind of an interesting part of the story.
Yeah.
Immediately after I'd gone through this sense of being raptured, that mm-hmm. that Christ had returned,
right,
and that I was understanding that. I think I need to give something before I do this, though.
Okay.
I had been introduced to the idea that the Baha'i Faith teaches that whenever the time is right, God sends the manifestation of God's will into the world, that Christ was a manifestation of God's will to show us what a perfect human should be like.
And Muhammad was a manifestation.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in this particular story, the idea is that what God is sending to us now is the manifestation of God for this day to teach us what humanity in its kingdom
wholeness,
of God, in its wholeness would look like, and how we have to reflect that. So it was...
You don't become a perfect Arab, you become a perfect human being.
There you go. And the idea is that Jesus, as the Son, taught us how to become a perfect individual, and or not, you know, perfect, more Christ-like, and then that this new, the glory of God would come, and he would show us how God's purpose for humanity would look like. So the Father and the Son is that relationship to us. So anyway, the teaching is that God raised up a young man in the Middle East who stood up one day and fundamentally said, we've entered the new age. We've entered the seventh day. We've entered the millennium. We've entered a new dimension of human spiritual development.
Okay.
The next day, now that happened to be May the 23rd, 1844.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, the telegraph was invented, and the first electronic communication was had. The day after this young man in the Middle East spoke, and the first message over that telegraph was, what hath God wrought?
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. Then the second thing is, he said, I am the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I am the gate to this new age. I'm here to open your hearts, to be ready, because the glory of the Lord is coming. Mm-hmm. And he's going to show us God's will for establishing the kingdom of God on earth. He is the return of the Christ Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just say the clergy around that period of time were fundamentalists. Matter of fact, they were fundamentalist Muslims.
Yeah.
They reacted negatively and attacked and started killing, and a whole lot of things happened. But let's just say it was not well received. Thousands died.
Right.
But one young man began to speak and teach in behalf of this one who called himself the gate. And in his language, it's pronounced the Bab. The Bab means the gate.
It's B-A-B.
B-A-B, and it means the gate. And there's actually a Bible prophecy, the 24th Psalm, that says, lift up your heads, O ye gates, lift up your heads, ye everlasting door, and the King of glory shall come in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now exactly in 24th Psalm is what this young man was teaching. Several years later, a young man began to teach, and the government got afraid because he was of, shall we say, high family status. So they put him in a dungeon and tried to basically torment him into renouncing this faith in the Bab. But instead, he did not. He began to teach in that dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes that the Shah's wife heard music and said, where is that coming from? And, oh, it's the prisoners in the deep dungeon singing. And they were singing praises to God. Well, these were the worst criminals in the empire were in that hole with
mm-hmm.
him. But they were singing hymns. Make a long story short, the government got afraid of that. We better not let this guy out. So they decided to get rid of him. And they sent him, of all places, to Baghdad,
mm-hmm.
where he began to teach.
Yeah, he wasn't otherwise. I guess he was in Tehran otherwise.
Yes, he was in Tehran.
Yeah.
This was Shiite Muslim country.
Right.
And these were the people who were persecuting the early Babis, who were the followers of the Bab. Now they sent him to Baghdad, and he began to teach there. Make a long story short, the Baha'i faith was first introduced, of all places, Baghdad. But the government again became fearful. They thought this has got to stop. So they thought, we'll send him farther away. So they sent him to Constantinople. And there he began to teach, and people started coming from all over to listen. And he revealed that his name was, he was the glory of God promised in all the scriptures.
That's Baha'u'llah.
And in that language of Arabic, it's pronounced Baha'u'llah. Mm-hmm. But in English, it's the glory of the Lord. All right. So the government didn't know what to do with him. They didn't want to kill him and make another martyr like Jesus.
Right.
So they decided to send him where they thought he would disappear. No one would ever want to know where he went. There was a prison city that was supposed to be so foul that if a bird flew over it, it would die from the smell.
Mm-hmm.
This place happened to be in Palestine,
right,
which is now Israel. But
right.
They exiled him. As he came up on the shores, he was in chains. And he said, and so the prophecies are fulfilled. I have come to thee from the east,
mm-hmm.
and the glory of the Lord is now shining. And basically,
And then, now that is the pilgrimage city now for Baha'is. And what's the name of this old city again?
It's it's Haifa, Israel, and Acre, which are two cities that are there. One is the prison city, which is the old name of it was Acre, and then the city of Haifa is right there on the other side of the bay.
As is Acre, actually, then it was a stronghold for the Crusaders.
The Crusaders built it 1,000 years ago, but it had been used as a prison.
Yeah.
For the worst criminals in the empire that they wanted to get rid of, political generally and other.
Now we have to remember this is at the end of the or near the end of the Ottoman reign, and that what they were transferring around was the different parts of the Ottoman Empire.
This is the 1850s.
Yeah,
and the Bob started the whole thing on May the 23rd, 1844.
Now he only taught himself for about 16 years before he was dispatched, right? Before he was killed.
He was the Bob taught from 1844 to 1850. His time was for 6 years. They executed him, along with about 20,000 of his followers.
Yeah.
But they didn't kill Baha'u'llah because he was of, shall we say, high-ranking family, and they didn't want to make that advertised, so they decided just to make him disappear. But he, of course, was protected by God to be able to eventually come to Israel. And he's the Rose of Sharon because he wound up being exactly at the place where Mount Carmel is, and above that is the Plain of Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
And he would walk along that area as prophesied that the Rose of Sharon would appear.
Right.
And we now hold all of that area sacred, and that's the world center of the Baha'i faith. We believe that Israel has a purpose for existing, and that is that it's to be the spiritual land of unity between Muslims, Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, Baha'is.
And as soon as people decide that Jerusalem is truly the city of peace and not a piece of real estate, and allow it to be administered on an international basis or a trans-faith basis rather than this little sectarian. Well, even the Christians are terribly sectarian about Jerusalem.
What we believe is that Israel, for many years, for centuries, was the only bright light in the West with the belief in one God and carrying out God's purposes. And God made them promises for their great sacrifices they made, and they've made them throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
And we honor that, and we believe that they're basically their reward for all they've gone through is that they will be the caretakers of the spiritual center of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that all the other, as it says in Isaiah, and the mountain of the Lord will be raised up, and all nations shall flow unto it. And they'll say, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, and we will learn of his ways and his laws. We believe that's literally being fulfilled today, because in that area we have beautiful gardens and a mountain of terraces. And anyone who wants to look into it can look farther. But basically we believe this is the spiritual center that all of us can now kind of come together from all nationalities, from all tribes on earth, and recognize that the Lord is calling us to a whole new perspective, a universal perspective.
Now, let's say we're doing a sort of once-over lightly here about the Baha'i faith today, and then next week we're going to continue with Ray when we talk more about the and a little more depth about his understanding of prophets, which is Baha'i teaching, but you know it's a Baha'i teaching through the rays of Ray Estes, and you know there is an unorthodoxy in Baha'i. I guess that's an important thing to let people know because of the lack of having a clergy. A lot of which has not been translated, but some is translated.
And we actually are very organized and structured. It's just that the power doesn't lie in individuals. It lies in elected councils,
in the community. Yeah.
We have a supreme body that is called the Universal House of Justice, and it's the nine that we elect. mm-hmm. that basically are like the final decision makers of any decisions that would be conflicting in the
body. And they're all women, of course. Yes.
Yes. They have to be men.
Yeah.
And
they have a strange. They have the strange rule that one of these days, I'm sure they will see the enlightened aspect of revising.
Well, these are issues that are sometimes hard to understand because, on one hand, we exalt women in ways that you would almost say we are, quote-unquote, favoring women, and then turn mm-hmm. around and have other things that people say, oh, no, that's favoring men. And part of it is to understand this. We see men and women as co-equal in value, mm-hmm. but different in mm-hmm. function. Mm-hmm. And there are some functions that you could say are greater than others, but
this is biology is the destiny, folks, but we won't need to get too much into that.
Well, I tell you this, my own personal journey, I have witnessed what I believe that the Spirit of God is letting us know that many things we thought were feminine were really more human.
Right.
And that even we men today have got to realize we've kind of entered an age where the feminine qualities are being more exalted spiritually than what we previously thought were male ways of doing things.
Okay, let's say I'm hearing about the Baha'i faith first on this radio broadcast, which is probably unlikely, but let's go on that. Let's go on that lovely fiction. And I want to I'm curious enough to want to find the Baha'is, some Baha'is to talk to, maybe go to a Baha'i meeting. Where do I look them up in the phone book under churches?
You can, and that's one way. Mm-hmm. There's a Baha'i center in Durham on Revere Street.
Yeah, and I've been by it a number of times.
Yeah, and it's a very short little street. You can't miss it. Mm-hmm. And it's a small center, but it's a center where people can go on Sunday mornings, say 10:15, 10:30. And there you'll find Baha'is, and you'll see how we gather together.
And they have children's services, and it's nicely family-oriented.
Well, and one of the things you'll notice about a Baha'i group, they look like a bunch of people who don't belong together because we don't have a unific look outwardly. We're black and white, Eastern and Western, very definitely a homogeneous of humanity that gathers together.
If you're an interracial couple, you'll find the Baha'is are extremely warm because of their own belief that of the non-racial divides that are still so deep in our society. So interracial couples are very well welcome in a Baha'i community.
We're actually encouraged to marry across all the barriers. Mm-hmm. In other words, spiritually we're united, but physically we believe in married with across cultural lines, racial lines.
Yeah, but you do have a few issues that might don't fit into pure political correctness. Like, I don't think you're totally open to transgender people yet.
Well, we see this, that there's a spiritual understanding of marriage, and that is that the purpose of marriage ultimately is to procreate the race.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to do if you don't have a womb don't have a viable other organ.
At the same time, we believe in loving and respecting every human being on earth. We don't go around with a yardstick to say you're this or you're that, or you're not correct, or you're... We believe that the spirit of the heart is still the primary concern of God, is do you have love, do you have respect, do you have justice in your heart?
So this means that you wouldn't be adamantly anti-homosexual.
That's right. We're not anti-anybody, but there are certain practices. For example, I was a fornicator. Let me put it this way. I was a fornicator. I went to church. God forgave me for being a fornicator and allowed me to become a full-blooded Christian, all right?
Or at least
same spirit.
Monogamous, reasonably monogamous, yes. Folks, yes.
And so we believe that we all have come short of the glory of God.
Monogamous in body, if not in spirit, right? Yeah.
And that the idea is that God loves us by by the fact that we love. We let love into our hearts and justice into our hearts. So we don't go around making judgments about what people are doing. We have a standard that we believe the Holy Spirit is teaching us, the Word of God through Baha'u'llah's teachings teach us to live a moral and upstanding life and to raise beautiful children, all right? Now, we have to be good citizens, and we have to respect the rights of others, and we have to realize we're all moving forward and in various degrees and ways. But what really matters is that spirit that comes from our hearts is the true judgment. As Jesus said, you shall know them by their fruits.
So in other words, if let's say I'm a gay couple, whatever, you know, male, female, whatever gay couple I happen to be, I would be reasonably welcome in a Baha'i community.
In this sense, that you as an individuals who are children of God, you are welcome. We would love to share with you all the beauty of God's message. Now, but on the other hand, you probably wouldn't be able to get married in a Baha'i community
you wouldn't recognize gay marriage.
Exactly. You know?
Get whatever it is, civil union or whatever it is that we're going to.
We have no statements on such things. In other words, we are not involved in the political legal system in that way at all. But from a spiritual perspective, because of our understanding that marriage is basically to bring about unity of families for the purpose of raising up a whole new generation of people, there would be a difference. But here's the thing. There are so many things far worse than getting on gay people's case.
Exactly.
Like, for example, in the Baha'i faith, the worst sin you can do is to say negative things about another person that takes away from what others might think of them. It's called backbiting. We're told
negative form of gossip, folks.
Exactly.
People love to talk about other people and say nasty things about them.
Yes. Yeah. And this is far worse to us than many of the things that we commonly want to make a big deal out of. So we're less interested in making judgments of other people, more interested in promoting this, the unity of the human family to do away with war and racial prejudices and all the hatreds that are going on.
Right.
We want to get past it. Now, we all come short. We want to look at each other with a forgiving eye.
Right.
And move forward in whatever way we can be unified. You know, sometimes you can't be unified. Like, for example, not everybody's going to be friendly to the Baha'i community.
Right.
But we're going to be friendly with everybody else. Even though not everyone would be friendly with us. Like those who have persecuted us. Those same people who persecuted some of their early believers are the ones that brought the Baha'i faith to the rest of us.
Now, another thing is that Baha'is, for instance, let's say you wanted to run for city councilman. As a Baha'i, apparently, there's some stricture about not being involved in partisan politics.
Partisan politics is the key.
So how does this work?
Well,
does that mean
I could serve
on the school board?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can be a part of the community in any way where you're not pitted against somebody else. In other words, where to come to power, you can't be pitted against some other person.
Well, that means you couldn't stand for election then.
If you could see it in a partisan way, it cannot be done. However, many Baha'is serve in governments, they serve in community service. Always, except one thing.
You can serve, right?
We can serve, but we won't divide the community over taking a stand against somebody else.
So for instance, then you wouldn't run for congressperson because to do so would be the force to have to run either as a Republican or Democrat
independent. We register as independents in this country because we do not register in any party. And we vote in every election according to our conscience of who we believe would be the best person for the job, but not based on their political
affiliations. As long as they're Democrats. Yeah, I understand.
No.
I just throw in my little bias there. That's okay.
That's the thing. We would be considered in many ways, I'll give you an example, we'd be considered liberal on social issues, except because it's interesting. We happen to be right to life in the sense that most of us, now again, we each are free to see for ourselves, but I believe our teachings do not go along with
abortion. Do not condone it with abortion, right?
We would definitely be pro-life. Yeah. On the other hand, we don't think that it's our job to legislate how others should see it.
Yeah.
This is a religious issue that needs to be resolved in our hearts, maybe less than in the court of law.
Actually, one of the things I'm doing this year is I'm taking a course in Catholic social teachings, which you'd find interesting. I don't think you'd learn anything with that. And, of course, one of the things about Catholic social teachings is obviously they are pro-life and anti-abortion.
Mm-hmm.
However, they do. There is a place that they say that, you know, this is the guideline, but you should vote your conscience.
In that sense, we agree with the Catholic Church at that stage.
Yeah, and my position with the voting of conscience is that one of the problems with attempting to destroy access to abortion, I'm saying abortion is a good thing, but by attempting to prohibit access to safe abortions, one is it endangers the lives of women who may need to seek abortion for reasons that moral reasons that they themselves need to work on. In other words, it's a matter of conscience. But conscience means the freedom of a person to determine this. And if you try to overdetermine the place where people need to make these decisions for themselves, you can create a wrong. And it's not an easy one, because your own belief is this is life, this is the sacredness of life, and yet from the point of view of the full conscience of other people, they're needing to find a place to think, we should allow them to have medically safe abortions. Not that we would do it, but that they can be done, and it can be done in the most humane way. Hopefully that won't be necessary, and provide alternatives, but not to punish or hurt people who, for their own moral reasons, do not feel that abortion is a destruction of life.
Well, the Baha'i position is very clear on this, that we believe that life begins at conception,
mm-hmm.
but that each individual has to make those decisions for themselves at this time as to what is the implications of that belief.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no, at this time, might say, position of the Baha'i faith as a community that others are obliged to live by. They have to look at this and then see with their own eyes, their own heart, to make a decision.
And that's my argument with the Catholic Church, is that they have overstepped the boundaries of free conscience. And I know that free conscience doesn't mean laxness, but it does mean that there needs to be a place, a safe place, where people make decisions. And some of those decisions may not be the decisions that, in all good deliberation, we would necessarily agree with.
Right.
For instance, you know, I'm against the death penalty, but at the same time, to the degree that there is going to be a death penalty, I want it to be a humane one.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's weird, but, you know.
Well, I would like to say other thing that on this, we really do back up the idea that each person has to see for themselves, and we believe in independent investigation of truth. But it even goes so far as this, just like I'm on this program and I'm sharing my ideas about the Baha'i faith, we don't believe any one individual has the right to stand up and say, this is the Baha'i view.
Yeah, and we'll be clear about that. Next week, when we get into the more particular story of prophetology, which is going to be very interesting, folks. I find Ray a compelling, interesting character, and I always enjoy things. We're both mystics, what fuels his insights is his basic sense of being inspired by the divine universality, and what I find fascinating is his insights into this stuff. You have been listening to part one of Touchstones. I also wanted to announce that Touchstones will be ceasing production, at least any kind of regular production, at the end of this year. So we'll be our last show, I think, will be on December 29th. I don't know what the program committee will replace it with. I will still be around on the Carborough Book Beat, which is on Mondays from 10 until 11 a.m. And I might every now and then do a special show about something that I'll be with. But Touchstones will be off the air, and we'll hopefully get another religion show on here eventually. So, Ray Estes, thank you for being with us today.
I thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my heart.
And as I said, we'll be here next week to delve into more aspects of Ray Estes' views on the Baha'i faith. And do suggest at one point or another that if you're interested in checking out the wonderful religious smorgasbord of that's available in Carborough and Chapel